I was living in Glasgow and I was still quite a young woman. And my dad and mum got divorced. And then my dad came up to visit me and he said, he was trying to work out how to live now that he wasn't in a married life. And he said, you know, there really aren't any options. You either live on your own or you find another partner. And it did make me sort of think, gosh, our society with all its ideals around choice don't offer very much, actually. Yeah. So we do offer something different. So I'm going to start with a poem, my favorite poem, by Naomi Shihab Nye, called The Art of Disappearing. And I've given a talk before on renunciation, Tsongkhapa's teaching on renunciation, where I've used this poem. When they say, "Don't I know you?" say no. When they invite you to a party, to the party, remember what parties are like before answering. Someone telling you in a loud voice that they once wrote a poem. Greasy sausage balls on a paper plate, then reply. If they say, "We should get together," say, "Why?" It's not that you don't love them anymore. You're trying to remember something too important to forget. Trees. The monastery bell at twilight. Tell them you have a new project. It will never be finished. When someone recognizes you in a grocery store, nod briefly and become a cabbage. When someone you haven't seen in 10 years appears at the door, don't start singing him all your new songs. You will never catch up. Walk around feeling like a leaf. Know you could tumble any second. Then decide what to do with your time. It's kind of interesting, her last verse, because years ago when I was looking at The Simple Life and renunciation and all this, I found this lovely quote from Bhante where he said something like, "If you don't reflect on impermanence early in the morning, you will be very distracted by lunchtime." And it's probably true, although I've never taken it up. So the art of disappearing is basically knowing what you really want to do with your life, basically. She's writing as a poet, knowing she really wants to be a poet, and she's got to kind of pare down her life. She's got to say no to quite a lot of things in order to say yes to something else. So we've got to know what we're saying yes to in order to say no to something else. So your life is simple. We're following a simple life because we want to say yes to something more important than all the distractions and complexity of the other endeavors. So you have to know what's at the center of your mandala. You have to know what you're really, really trying to achieve, what activities or what you're really trying to achieve in your life. And then after that, your life becomes simple. So I am somebody that is described quite well by that last reading that Ratnagosha described. I was just a very distracted, associative sort of person. It took me a long time to learn how much I needed the support of a very focused life. I remember a Mitra friend saying to me, I was like a tree blowing in the wind. You couldn't see my shape. I'm not sure anybody says that anymore. And I remember Arya Chitto, when I was working in team-based right livelihood, in one of the team-based right livelihoods that Ratnagosha mentions. I was working in ink, print and design. And Vijaya Mala offered me a job working in the accounts team at Wintours. And because I was working in a blokes team, I thought, well, maybe it'd be good to work in a women's team, in the accounts team in Cambridge. And I remember Arya Chitto saying to me, "Do you really think you can narrow down that much?" And that's because I just lived a very broad, associative, what would it be, distracted life in many ways. Yeah. But gradually I learned how much I needed a strong container. I needed an immersive life and I needed a strong center. I really needed to know what I was doing with it. So there have been different times in my life where I've had different things at the center of the mandala, of my mandala, or different aspects of when I've practiced very hard to try and change something in myself. When I separated from a very informative relationship, when I was in my mid-20s. And I took on the practice of stillness, simplicity, and contentment. And I've been practicing that for about a month when a Dharmachari approached me in Glasgow and said, "What are you doing right now?" And I said, "I'm practicing stillness, simplicity, and contentment." And they said, "Your body language has completely changed in the last few weeks." So I'm just saying, if you really can put something there and really get your, well, put your shoulder against it, you can make a big difference quite quickly. There was another while where I put freedom and authenticity at the center of my life. And this was a stage when, a stage of my life where friendship was probably the most dynamic in my life. So I was developing very, very strong friends. I was living with Virya Devi continually and checking in with her almost every day. And I had a very important relationship at that time. And I chose to really buy my freedom by being able to say, how can I put this? I wanted to not be held back at all in communication, which meant taking a lot of risks in those relations, those two relationships in particular. So this is how I placed authenticity and freedom at the center of my life, at the center of my mandala. Again, it simplified my life a lot. My focus was on my communication, and in particular on my communication with these two people. And then in the year leading up to ordination, I put enlightenment at the center of my life. I put the fact that it was possible for me to gain enlightenment, and this became a living, experience, a living experience for me, because of the way that my life was unfolding at that time. And I thought, if I can just put enlightenment at the center of my life, from now on, all my decisions are going to be simple. You kind of know what to do. If you always use that as a reference point, you know how to make your decisions. And all the way through, I'm asking, what effect does this have on my consciousness? Whatever it is that I'm doing, what effect is this having on my consciousness? What effect is this having on my spiritual life? And I was making the decision, as much as possible, I was making the decision from that basis. What was helping? So this is a simple life. A simple life is being really clear what your purpose is. You can have a lot of activity in it. You can have quite a lot of things in it if necessary, as long as it's all shaping in that direction. In other words, it's a mandala. It's a mandala of direct and indirect, direct and indirect methods of practice, if you like, holding the center of the mandala there in place. So that's the first point I wanted to make, that it's important to know what your life's all about, what the real value or what the purpose of your life is. Okay, then another reason why to lead a simple life. I'm going to borrow from Subhuti and Bhante's paper on the suprapersonal force. And looking at the whole kind of section on the bonds of self. So Subhuti puts it very well. He says we're trying to unfasten the bonds of self. And we do this through Dharma practice, through serving the Dharma, and through a Dharma lifestyle. And under a Dharma lifestyle, we have supportive conditions and looking at attachment and renunciation. So under attachment and renunciation, this is just the bit that I'm going to go into right now. So we know ego clinging, or self-assertion, if you like, is the deep structure of our consciousness. We're wired up to look out for ourselves all the time. What's in it for us? Yeah. What are my preferences? Placing them in our experience. And we're solidifying ourselves all the time through our environment. So we're identifying with a lot of aspects around us. We identify aspects of our experience with as mine and as not mine. So our existential security is based on what we've surrounded ourselves with. So that could be possessions. Well, I'll go into it in a minute, but our life coagulates. Subhuti uses this phrase, our life coagulates into self, which I really love. So we're trying to create a situation in this simple life or in the Adhisthana life. We're trying to create a situation that resists this solidification of self. So we can solidify, if you like, we can shore up the self through possessions, through people, through ideas and ideologies. I'm sure we can do it in different ways. These are the ones I just came up with this afternoon. So possessions. You know, we are who we are because we have certain books on the shelf. I've got a friend who used to say, I thought I had a yoga practice because on my coffee table there was a book on yoga. And in some ways you can sort of fool yourself into this. I'm always very struck by people when they're on Zoom, how they often sit in front of their bookcase. It's a bit like, I am what I've read, and this is what I've read. We can surround ourselves by a certain kind of relationship, popularity, people. There's this modern thing which we've always experienced, even though it's only been named recently, this FOMA, fear of missing out of in certain kind of contact. We shore up the self by being involved and being popular in that way. We're creating relationships that say something about who we are. And then there's ideas and ideologies. We read books, we watch presentations, we seek out people and certain conversations that confirm our views, whether those views belong to the Dharma or not. So a simple life is a life that supports the process of unfastening these bonds of self. Different ways. And we need a lifestyle. We need an environment around us or a lifestyle that will support us to do that, especially if our discipline and our determination are not very strong. So my discipline and determination is not very strong, and I need a very strong lifestyle around me. I'm always very struck by a friend that Bodhiketu describes, where he's, you know, the guy's living and working very strongly in the world. He's supporting a family that's quite demanding, and he has a very, very deep, strong meditation practice. And I think, oh, he doesn't need favorable conditions. He can work very well in conditions that don't support him in the same way that I need. So in a simple life, we need to be more conscious of what we're doing and why we're doing it. Where are we serving the situation and where are we serving ourselves? Just notice where the self snags on reality. Okay, then, and we've chosen to live in a collective situation, even quite a complex situation. But we need to be spiritually active within it, which is not the same as being busy. I think it's very easy in this situation, just because it is such an immersive situation, to think that we're already taken care of spiritually, but we can be quite passive, spiritually passive in this environment. Bhante says, usually people think of themselves as being very busy and active, but there may be an underlying passivity all the same. The spiritual life is an active life, and there is a tremendous feeling that comes with the activity of the spiritual life. You can only ever experience yourself at all deeply in action. I think he means like when you've got the initiative, when you're taking the initiative in your life spiritually, then you experience yourself very strongly. He says pleasure is essentially passive, but happiness occurs when we are active. So you can think a bit about that, passivity, spiritual passivity and spiritual activity. What does that look like? And a simple life is based on values rather than preferences and possessions. We've chosen a life where it's possible to live out our values within a shared experience of creating a value-based environment. I was thinking that people that I know who have left the NHS or people that I know who have left a teaching profession have often done so not because they were working so hard, but because they could no longer see the values that they held reflected in the environment that they were working within. So we've got a privileged situation here of working and living within an environment where our values can be reflected back to us. And they can be reflected back to us at greater and greater levels. And it's our duty, if you like, to bring our own individual values into the collective situation, help develop the values that are reflected around us. So sometimes we're following others in that value-based environment, and sometimes we're the ones that are leading, whether you're an order member or mitra.